This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. A new charter school is opening in central Indiana this summer that aims to build a curriculum around identity. We're joined now by Francisco Valdiosara, founder and executive director of the Monarca Academy. Francisco, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the Monarca Academy. What is it? Where did you get the idea to start it?
Thank you. We're really excited to be able to serve the community here in Indianapolis with such a model. My name is Francisco Valdiosara. Among other things, I'm a husband, father, immigrant, first-generation college graduate, and proudly serve as the director of Monarca Academy. I begin with identity because identity is at the heart of all we do at Monarca Academy. We believe that students should never have to leave the beauty and reality of their lived experiences away from the world of school. So Monarca Academy is a 6th to 12th grade college prep community school open to students of all backgrounds. Our vision is to create an environment inspired by the Latino and immigrant experience, but really, like I said, open to all students, where we explore identity. We develop leaders through high academic standards, culturally responsive practices, and community building. We've codified this vision into our founding values of ganas, which means perseverance, orgullo, which means pride, and comunidad, which means community.
So where did you get the idea to start this? I mean, this is obviously something very unique. What propelled you to do this?
Yeah, you know, well, the vision and mission of Monarca Academy is really something that aligns with not just my lived experience and career experience, but also that of many immigrants and Latinos here in the city and across the country. Their values that the Latino immigrant community have helped shape, maintain, redevelop, and invigorate communities throughout the United States. And the thing about it is that these are not just, perfunctory values. They are grounded in research. You know, research shows that Latino parents have the highest percentage of expecting or wanting students to go to college. And so high academic standards is at the heart, or the first of the foundational values. And this really comes from my experience when I was a youth. Growing up, I was a part of the Upward Bound program. And also then when I became an educator, I led the AVID program, Advancement via Individual Determination. And what we learn is that high academic expectations are what are needed in order to address the opportunity gaps that exist in academia right now. But then the second value comes from culturally responsive practices also being something that research shows is good for all students, but especially for Black and Brown students. And this is something that we see that is lacking in many situations, in many schools where students are not exposed to culturally responsive practices. And that just doesn't just mean putting flags and putting up pictures of heroes. It means really students seeing themselves in the curriculum and seeing themselves in the leadership of the school and the teachers. And finally, comunidad. You know, in my experience of working at a community school here in Indianapolis, George Washington Community School, we were able to make gains because of the fact that when you put wraparound services on with students, when you provide the health and social services that students need and families need, then students can focus on actualizing their potential. And through our partnership, currently we now have agreed to a anchor organization partnership with La Plaza, the organization here in Indianapolis, and we will be able to provide our students and our families with those services. So the idea then comes from those three very strong research-based areas that will close opportunity gaps for students. And that is where the idea comes from, not just from my lived and career experience, but also from things that work to in education.
You mentioned about representation and curriculum and leadership and things like that for students, especially for students from Black and Brown communities to have that. Are you finding that there are enough folks in the education sector, you know, as teachers and mentors that are able to fill those gaps, or is that still an area that's lacking?
Well, there's two things. Sure, you know, there is right now everyone is experiencing, especially in education, teachers that, they're having a difficult time staffing in terms of teaching. But at the same time, our model, we believe, is something that will tap into the why of teachers. In fact, we have not posted jobs yet because we are in enrollment mode, but we have already been contacted by teachers who are very interested in our model. Because like I said, this is the why of many teachers.
For students that want to attend Monarca Academy, is it important for them to come from a background in a Latin or immigrant experience to get the most out of the education?
We're very intentional about, you know, explaining that we are open to all students. We close opportunity gaps for all students. And being first generation college bound and participating in the Upward Bound program, I saw students of all backgrounds when I was young, and in being an AVID coordinator, really that the idea of the first generation college bound student is something that that motivates staff members and teachers to work in such an environment. So we are not, it's not a detriment to not be of Latino descent. Like I said, we are just inspired by the Latino and immigrant experience, coming from the idea that high academic expectations is a universal concept. Pride or culturally responsive practices help all students, and community building and community resources is something that that we all need. But we are very intentional about the fact that we are inspired by the Latino and immigrant experience, but we are open to all students, and all students' identities are important. And we do not want any student to ever leave any part of themselves behind, whether that be cultural or social.
How do you create a curriculum around identity development and cultural responsiveness?
Well, the great thing is that curriculum out there is starting to get more diverse, and it's starting to be very well represented in terms of the representation with the authors you read, the experiences that you learn about in history, and what perspectives you are able to explore in all aspects of the curriculum. Our founding principal led in culturally responsive practices in her district, and so she's very well versed in not just in implementing culturally responsive practices, but also in ensuring that the curriculum itself reflects the faces of the students. But I'll also say that the staff that we hire will also be reflective of the students that we serve. Whatever student enrolls at our school, we want to make sure that they see themselves in all aspects of not just the curriculum, but also in the staffing.
The program that you're putting together and the school, one might argue, why not work on creating this type of a curriculum in already established schools versus building a brand new school? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the quick answer to that is the autonomy that that provides, that this model provides outside of the we are looking to partner with the Indianapolis Public Schools. That's something that is pending and we have applied for. And I will also say that as an assistant principal while I was at George Washington, this was something that I pushed and was advocated for. And there was support for. But then the, you know, with I was there at the time with Dr. White, and he was very supportive of it. And then, you know, the board let him go. And when I asked about this program, they said, well, we got to wait because we're going to have a new superintendent. This was back in 2011. And now 10 years later, we were still working on trying to get something like this started. So I guess the answer to this is just the quickness in which something like this can happen. And as Martin Luther King said, as his day was yesterday or the other day, he's like, sometimes we are often asked to wait and wait, and justice is not served when we have to wait.
Yes.
Not
yes.
Close, but that's
no. I mean, yeah, that's totally relatable. You know, sometimes you just have to take matters into your own hands and do what you can, because bureaucracy or whatever else is going on that'll hold you back. So when will the school will be open this summer?
Yes. So we're open. Actually, not open. Sorry. We are open for enrollment. So parents and students can log into Enroll Indy as we speak, and they can choose Monarca Academy to enroll in 6th, 7th. Or 8th grade for the upcoming school year. And so we will be open in August of this coming year.
Okay. And what kinds of experiences and lessons are you hoping the school will give to students?
Yeah, so starting with identity development, right? We want to make sure that all students ensure that their identity is respected and validated, not just through the curriculum, but also through some of our social cultural programming. We are partnering with many artists and musicians in the area so that we can create programming for students. For example, we have we're partnering with North Star Capoeira, and we will make sure that students in their vision, the performing arts, learn about capoeira, and not just the movement and the dance, but also the social cultural elements of it. So we'll incorporate that into the social studies curriculum, but also the PE curriculum. We also are partnering with folkloric dance groups to be able to for them to come in and teach our students about the folkloric dance of all of Latin America, but including any student that comes in from outside of Latin America. Of course, like I said, we do not want to leave that behind, and we want to make sure that every culture is represented. And finally, another partnership we're hoping to make, and I just had a meeting last week, is a partnership with Asante Children's Theater. They are traditionally African-American theater company. And so what we want to do is we want to do some theater around intersectional issues around Black, Brown, and other communities. So we're very excited about these partnerships through our visual and performing arts department that will expand students' understanding of their own identity and other identities within their school.
Well, we're going to take a quick break in a moment, and when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about your own experiences and how that led to the forming of this academy.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about a new charter school that focuses on creating an identity in a multicultural environment. If you have any questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're talking about incorporating ideas around identity and living in a multicultural environment into a school's curriculum and a new school opening this summer that focuses on that complex issue. We're joined again by Francisco Valdiosera, founder and executive director of the Monarca Academy. Francisco, before the break, I mentioned I'd like to hear about your story and how that sort of influenced you and into going into this education field and what your experience was like going to school. So if you could tell us a little bit, if you don't mind, I don't want to pry too much, but if you can tell us a little bit about your own experience going to school and how your identity was impacted.
I'd love to. Thank you. That's so important as part of what we do at Monarca. You know, I came to the United States as an undocumented immigrant at the age of 5. Through hard work, perseverance, and the support of educators and also my community, I was able to attend Stanford University. And now I feel like I'm in a position to serve our community. My journey to college and career success is replicable, and I have dedicated my 20-year career as an educator to paving that path for other students. That first part of my journey began with academic success, or what we call ganas. I participated in the Upward Bound program as a student, and this was a place where I really learned, developed the skills necessary to succeed in college. Programs such as these showed me as a youth and now as an educator that it is not enough to give students a great speech, telling them that they can achieve anything they put their mind to, but we must equip them with the tools to succeed in that world of academia and then allow them to adopt academics into their identity. Upon entering Stanford University, I began taking courses in ethnic studies, and then I realized that if my K-12 education had included more of these validation and empowerment that culturally responsive practices provide students such as myself, I feel that way more kids that I grew up with would have made it to college. I'm not alone in saying that there were many students who were way smarter than I was when I was growing up. And I don't know what happens along the way. I have some ideas as an educator, but many times we become discouraged and disenfranchised. And for one reason or another, some of us are pushed and some of us are not. Mm-hmm. So as an educator, I created and taught Latin American studies at my alma mater when I went back to become an educator. And then the third foundational principle of comunidad comes from my experiences in working at a community school here at George Washington Community School. You know, when my wife and I came to Indianapolis. Eli Lilly recruited her in 2005, and we found that there was a growing Latino and immigrant community. And it was a community very similar to the one I wish to serve. And it is a community I wish to serve. And some of the things that I found serving at George Washington Community School was definitely that the community supports are important, but also that representation matters. You know, the accomplishments of our students during the time that we were there, my founding principal was there too at the time, are the students' accomplishments are theirs, but the representation is so important. During that time, there were about 7 Latino valedictorians in a row at George Washington Community School. And I know that that belongs to them, that is their hard work, but that also goes to show that representation matters. And I'll say that because 5 of those valedictorians were Latino males. And that is one of the most difficult things for schools to do is to serve Latino males well, Latinos in general, all students in general, Black and brown students in general. But this is something that we found was very important in that representation, but also providing high academic standards, cultural relevance, and in the community aspect. So that's my journey a little bit. I didn't go into a lot of details about my personal and career experience has led to this culmination of what Monarca Academy is.
Did you find, it sounded like you mentioned when you were in college and you started taking some classes, looking back, like if you'd only had that kind of, opportunity or knowledge, it would have maybe changed or shifted some things. Do you think that you were able to do this out of your own sheer willpower, or were there people that pushed you? Because you also mentioned that some people get pushed and some people don't. So sometimes I think a lot of folks just through their own perseverance were able to push through and get where they are. But if they had had a mentor, they could have gone even further.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, so I feel that the two things that I had 2 out of the 3, I didn't have the culturally responsive practices, but I did have teachers who really pushed me. And I had a community that supported me. And that community for me was the Upward Bound program. And the ganas, or the high academic expectations, came from my teachers. And I'll say this. One of my favorite teachers was my algebra teacher, pushed me, actually got me into the Upward Bound program. And I often think about what was it that led her to push me so hard. And I think that a part of it had to do with the fact that I spoke English very well. I think that she believed that I was documented, because the things I heard her speak in class in California at a time of much anti-immigrant sentiment, she spoke very poorly about undocumented people, and she didn't know that I was undocumented right there in her classroom. So that is to say, like, the way the teacher made me feel in terms of my identity was something I don't want for students. Yeah. But the way she made me feel in terms of wanting to achieve at high academic standards was something I do want for students. So one of my favorite teachers is also one of my least favorite teachers.
That's got to be tough. I mean, just to as you mentioned, the cultural responsiveness isn't there. And it's like you're a great student, but there are some digs being thrown out there at the same time.
Yes, and I don't want to let go of the fact that today and probably in 30 minutes there's going to be a vote, or there's going to be discussions about in-state tuition for undocumented students here in Indianapolis. I was one of the educators that was asked to come and speak in 2011 in front of legislators in Indiana, because that was the time when they were deciding to change the rule and make out-of-state tuition for undocumented students. So it is, it's coming back around.
Well, with regards to the challenges that you faced as a young student, do you feel that any of those obstacles or challenges got easier as you got older, or are times sort of changing and people are more aware to some of these issues?
I want to give the credit to the young generation, the ones that call themselves Latinx. Mm-hmm. I love them. They are unapologetic in a way that I never was when I was growing up. And that is something that I want for all students. They are proud of who they are, and they are working to, to better their lives and to have the opportunities that they deserve. They are the ones working right now to get these things done. And those are the types of students that we want at Monarca Academy. We want students who who want to learn more about themselves and have a certain sense of pride, but we will also make sure that we instill that pride within them.
It's interesting. I was just talking with my kids about this the other day, just how the younger generations are just pushing forward and unafraid, unapologetic, as you mentioned, versus like my experience going to school and feeling alienated or bullied because of my different background than everybody else. So hopefully the future generations will not have to deal with that sort of a trauma.
Yeah. And yeah, it got easier as you get older. But at the same time, I feel like once I became documented, there was a lot of privilege that came with that. Right.
Yeah. And so you now have kids that are going to school. How do you hope their experience will be different growing up in a multicultural environment from yours?
Yeah, well, my kids, I make sure that they understand their privilege, and I make sure they understand where they stand and where we stand as a community and where we're trying to go and what we're trying to achieve, not just for ourselves and for others. So my children, my personal children, they actually go with me, and they volunteer whenever we have a Monarca Academy event. They're there with their shirts and their masks. And they're ready to make sure that all communities, regardless of zip code, have access to high quality education, because that really is the key.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, Francisco. Is there anything you're doing that we can look out for in the coming weeks or months?
Yes, thank you. We will be putting out an open house and so that parents and students will learn more about Monarca Academy. We are in the process of asking Indianapolis Public Schools for space in one of their buildings so that we can launch. We feel that this would be a boost to Indianapolis, and we feel we want to be great partners in education to have just one more great option for students. And so we will be posting that in our social media, monarcaacademy.org, and in Facebook. We'll be reaching out. And for teachers out there, we're here. We are going to launch in the fall. And for parents, you know, just be on the lookout for our posts, and we'll be ready to serve our community here in the fall.
Well, thank you so much. Francisco Valdiosera is the founder and executive director of Monarca Academy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to another guest right now. With us is Ana Hernandez, a parent and program director of Grupo Folklorico Masyawani, a Mexican folk dance group in Indianapolis. Ana, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And I have to apologize. Am I saying Ana or Anna?
It's Ana.
Ana. Okay, perfect. So you grew up and went to school in Pike Township, and were also the only Mexican-American student in your class at the time. Can you tell us about what that experience was like going to school?
Yeah, my family, we moved here from California in, I believe it was like 1998. So I came in for, it was probably second semester of third grade in Pike Township back in 1998. I was pretty surprised on my first day of school to see that. I'm not sure if I realized exactly, like, hey, there's no one else here that is Mexican or Mexican American, but I just immediately knew that, okay, I'm the only one, and this feels really different. Because in California, I went to a school that was dual language, so a lot of the learning was in Spanish. Almost all of my classmates looked like me. Almost all of my teachers looked like me and spoke Spanish and English. So it was definitely a culture shock. And it was difficult. I think that the school began or launched their ESL program that year because there was a handful of students that were also Spanish speaking. So it was difficult.
Do you think that your teachers and peers realized what was happening to you as a student, the difficulties you were facing?
I just think that they were unprepared and they didn't know what to do. I remember that there was another student that had arrived, but I believe he was Cuban, and they sort of just sat us together, and it was my job to assist this student now because he spoke less English than I did. So we were sort of buddies, and it was kind of my responsibility to help him out if he didn't understand anything. I'm not sure that they knew what they were doing or how to handle the situation. So it sort of just led to a lot of difficulties, a lot of tough experiences in the classroom and just in the academic setting, and just quickly realizing that I have to assimilate, I have to be like all the rest, or my academic experience is going to be really, really difficult.
Did the challenges we heard from Francisco earlier, did that resonate with you and the experiences you had?
Yeah, it definitely did. I have talked to Francisco a lot about the school, about his plans, and I'm definitely on board with what he was talking about. And it's definitely, his experiences were similar to mine, but luckily not so much for my own children. I have children in elementary school right now, and it's not that bad anymore. You know, Indianapolis has changed. Marion County has changed. And there's a large number of Latino, there's a larger Latino population. And it's more common to run into somebody, you know, whose English is their second language. So I just want to, what I want to focus on myself as a parent is just making sure that they aren't ever in a situation where they feel like the other, and where they feel like they need to hide who they are, or just assimilate, I guess, in order to succeed academically.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for many of us growing up, the message was assimilate or just be an outcast. And now it's almost like being different is a good thing. It's celebrated. Do you think you're seeing that difference? You sort of mentioned, like, with your children, it's a little bit different. So do you think their identity and I guess feeling of belonging is a lot stronger than, let's say, you at that age?
Yes, I do think so. My children are transitioning to the middle school slowly, year by year. I have one that is in fifth grade right now and one that is in sixth grade right now. We had the opportunity to go to a dual language elementary school where, you know, their classmates, you know, looked like them. They're in this from the same neighborhood. Their teachers looked like them, spoke Spanish, spoke English, and the staff and the administration, they could see themselves reflected in teachers, in principals. And that was something that I never had. And I want to continue that experience for them. And I'm really glad that this middle school option has opened up so that they can continue to see all of the opportunities that we have, that we're not limited in any sense. So I am excited for moving forward and seeing all that Monarca is going to bring to the community.
How important is your multicultural identity to you?
So because for a large part of my elementary and middle school years, I truly did try to assimilate as much as possible, be like the rest. I'm not any different. I stopped speaking Spanish for a long time. And because of that, now as an adult that I've grown into accepting myself and understanding myself and loving myself and my culture, it's a large part of me as an adult now. And I, like you introduced me, I'm the program coordinator for Grupo Folklorico Masewani. So we have the Folklorico dance group. And that's what we do is we just work to preserve and share our culture with the city, with future generations through dance. So we perform all of the dances that are traditional to the different regions of Mexico. And this past year, I launched the children's program. So I'm the director for the children's group. And I work with kids all over Indianapolis and doing the same. I think that what I want to do is make sure that nobody feels like I did back in 1998 or 1999, that I needed to hide who I was, or, you know, in order to make friends in school,
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll continue this conversation after a break, if you're okay to stick around. I want to talk a little bit more about the dance program and your experiences. Ana Hernandez is a parent and program director of Grupo Folklorico Basiwani, a Mexican folk dance group in Indianapolis. After the break, we'll continue our conversation, and we'll also be joined a little later by our business and economics reporter to talk about a new push to cap payday loan rates. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam So, back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb, and we're back with Ana Hernandez, a parent and program director of Grupo Folklorico Masiwani, a Mexican folk dance group in Indianapolis. Ana, can you tell us a little bit more about this dance group and what the goal that you're hoping to achieve with it is?
Yeah, so we're entering, it's going to be almost 4 years now in Indianapolis, and our goal through this project is to continue sharing and promoting the beauty of our culture with the city, but also with the younger generations here in Indianapolis. So our own children, teenagers that may not be so in tune with, you know, all of the beautiful things about our culture, the music and the dance and the history and the richness of it, that is what we are passionate about sharing here in the city.
Do you find that dance and learning the history and all of that helps in informing identity?
I think that it does. I think that for Mexico specifically, I know it's not like that here in the United States, but each state in Mexico has its own specific cultural dance and wardrobe and the way that they dress and the way that they dance and the music that they listen to. So there's just so much history there that for you know, any particular, you know, the kids that I work with, I'll ask them, where are your parents from in Mexico? And sometimes they'll know, sometimes they won't know, they'll have to ask. And we have performed or learned dances from, you know, places where their families are from, and they can go back and talk to their parents about this. And it just, I think that it helps create a bond with the child, with their parents, with their grandparents, and open the opportunity for them to talk about these things. Like, yes, I remember at school in Mexico when we learned this dance, or I love this dance, I danced it myself before. I think that that's something important that we've been able to provide.
And is that something, I'm trying to remember if we discussed this in the earlier portion of the show or not, will you be doing stuff like this at Monarca?
We will. So that's a part of my my connection with Francisco and the work that we plan to be doing with him at Monarca. He wants to incorporate folklore as a part of the curriculum. So we're going to have the opportunity to work with the students. And this would be the first time that a folklorico program is incorporated in the school, as far as I know, in Indianapolis. So this is a great opportunity. We're so excited. This is a great opportunity for us as an organization to further our mission. And we're just so excited to work with students coming up here soon.
Well, as we get ready to wrap up here, do you have any advice for parents who may have had similar experiences, either growing up or with their own children of multicultural backgrounds, how they can navigate this world?
I think that the most important thing and what I try to push forward is to show the kids all of the ways in which their culture, their identity is beautiful, where they're from is beautiful, their neighborhoods are beautiful. Our West Side neighborhoods, where Monarca is going to be at, Eagledale, Havel, they're beautiful neighborhoods. They're Black and brown neighborhoods. And Monarca is going to be a school for the community, by the community, you know, a direct reflection of the community. And for parents, I think that we should all look for those spaces. And it would help so much, I think, in informing the child's identity and confidence.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, Anna.
Thank you.
Anna Hernandez is a parent and program director of Grupo Folklorico Masiwani, a Mexican folk dance group in Indianapolis. Now we're going to go and shift our gears a little bit into a different direction as we speak with our business reporter. Some advocates are pushing for legislation to be passed that could cap the annual percentage rates for payday loans. To find out what that means and what effect it could have, we're joined now by Samantha Horton, business and economics reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Welcome, Samantha.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Before we get into the details of interest rates, can you give us a little overview of what a payday loan is?
Yeah, simple just definition. I mean, payday loans, I'm just going to think of examples of like, they're just quick loans that someone might need for some extra cash in a pinch as examples that are given. And some things you could think of would be like maybe a car repair or you have a roof leak or just something that was maybe the examples given are just these unexpected costs maybe that you need some money to help pay for it. And so they're small loans. They're not like big loans like a mortgage or anything by any means, but they're just small loans. And so we'll talk a little bit more about the dangers of those, but you know, that's at least the concept of what these payday loans are.
In an article you wrote about a group working to push for House Bill 1159 and Senate Bill 253, you said advocates are working to push legislation again. How long have people been working on getting legislation around payday loan rates capped in Indiana?
This has been going on for quite some time. I mean, I've been covering it pretty much every single legislative session since I started in this role about 4 years ago. So, I mean, it's something that every time it comes up, there might be a committee hearing on it where, you know, advocates will push for putting a cap on these loans, but then we just don't see the legislation go through. So it's a constant cycle of, you know, what will it take almost to get some piece of legislation passed that would cap these loans? There are states that have. So, you know, Indiana, the thought is Indiana has opportunity to do something here. It's just, you know, getting the support in the state house to make that happen.
What do the two bills say in regards to how it would change payday loan rates in the state?
Yeah, so that's the big thing right now is so currently payday loans, like the annual percentage, like that can go up to as high as 391%. And so the goal is to cap those at 36%, which is quite lower, still pretty high when you look at interest rates. But 36% is the goal. There's reasons that that's being asked for based off of history with like some federal law that was passed in the early 2000s. So looking at that, it's, you know, that's kind of the basic ask this time around. There's been other times maybe other things have been added in, but at least these two bills focus on that as like just capping them at 36%.
Well, why is it important to cap payday loan rates? I know there's groups like Hoosiers for Responsible Lending advocating for that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of looking at it, there's just this, looking at the statistics, it's just the big thing is protecting those who are most vulnerable. So that's looking at, I mean, you hear from veterans groups who talk about, you know, the challenges that veterans have or even people in the reserve, which we have here in Indiana, the National Guard. Those groups that maybe aren't that aren't protected by a federal law that's in place for active military members, there's this push, you know, that, you know, you look at it and the chances of someone being a repeat borrower on these payday loans is pretty high. It's something that is a cycle that people might fall into. And the problem is when you have these high interest rates, it's really hard to pay it back. That's when it starts becoming kind of this spiraling in debt. And so the question is there other options that our, you know, our state communities are offering that could, you know, almost do some of this work without causing Hoosiers to go into debt?
If you're listening live right now and have any questions or comments, you can reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Samantha Horton, business and economics reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Samantha, groups like Hoosiers for Responsible Lending work to protect people from predatory lending. Can you talk about what predatory lending is?
Yeah, so I mean, that's really what comes down to the predatory lending part of this is just these interest rates, you know, and it's targeted too. You look at where maybe these stores are, like where these like storefront for payday loans are located. You know, you'll find them in like low income areas, and then it starts becoming this question of, you know, who are they really servicing? You know, is it really about serving, you know, just people who are in a pinch, or is it really targeting specific groups of, you know, vulnerable people who might, you know, be just needing some credit, some quick credit, and this is, you know, what's available. And it's one of those things that seems very easy, and it might seem really too good to be true is what some have described it, you know, going into, but then quickly realizing, you know, the consequences later on when trying to pay it back. So I know I've talked to like several groups, including groups that, you know, work with the veterans. So like one example I have, James Bowerly is a retired brigadier general. Retired brigadier general. And so he talks about a little bit about like, he's been at the state house, pushing for this cap and just talking about, you know, the bigger pictures here about why, you know, this is something that really we need to do.
We've tended to, in Indiana and our legislation, looked at regulating the industry instead of kind of switching to helping our citizens. We have a responsibility in the state and in our constitution of, you know, taking care of the health and welfare of Hoosiers. This is a great example of health and welfare for Hoosiers.
What are the current rates right now on payday loans in Indiana?
So the cap right now for Indiana is the 391% for payday lending. So that's why it's been that for a while here. So that's been the push, is to try to push that further down.
That sounds like a lot. I'm not a math numbers person that can do that very quick in my head, but that sounds like a lot.
I'm not always the best person to give the numbers right off here, but yeah, I mean, you look at this and even look at the interest rate right now that we're at. And I mean, it, you know, we talked to like people have heard about the like current federal interest rate and loans, you know, for that, like, you know, you could, you know, as low as like in a 2% rate, you know? So you look at these, and the argument too is like, these are maybe more at like risky loans. So there's a acceptance of like, okay, like you might need a little higher interest rate, but at what point is it a interest rate that's just due to the risk versus becoming like, you know, taking advantage of a situation and, you know, putting it at 391%.
Right. It's almost as if it's designed in a way that someone who can only get a loan in that way is going to end up paying more, and it's a moneymaker.
Yeah. So I think that's the big part, is it's the idea of, is it really helping the individuals who are needing them, or is it, you know, an industry business that is really the ones who are benefiting out of this. So that's, I think, where this is kind of hitting that conflict.
So we've talked about, you know, how it's being dealt with here in Indiana. Is this being talked about in other states right now, or is it just something local here?
Oh, no. Yeah, it's definitely being talked about in other states. I mean, for like, I know there's like, I know Indiana is just one of 25 states without a strong rate cap on payday loans. So, I mean, you know, at this point, Indiana is becoming, you know, like half of the states in the country haven't addressed this. So I think there's a push. There's push on the federal side. There's been some pushes to try to address this as well. But it is, you know, at the state actively being, at least like, can our state legislators find a solution for this?
Are there any options for folks who want to avoid predatory loans?
Yeah, and I'm really glad, because I think the conversation here too is like, okay, we address these, but what are there solutions in our communities currently to address this? And that's the big thing that I know Hoosiers for Responsible Lending, it's a group that formed, it's a coalition of different groups that have, you know, pushed for payday lending caps in the state, was formed this past year. I know they've looked and started bringing up solutions. And for example, Homestead CS in Lafayette, Indiana has, you know, been working on this for a while here to try to like help families who need loans and need help to, you know, keep like have a, like improve a credit score and just ways that can there be a solution to work, you know, with, you know, people in need of a loan, but not cause it to, you know, harm them financially going into the future. So, looking at it, it's like Marie Morse, with Homestead CS, she's executive director. She talks a little about this past, week, last week, she like at a press conference, she talked about her program and what they're trying to do and accomplish in Lafayette.
Our goal is to offer an affordable loan to our families that they can pay this loan back and still afford their housing and their other expenses. Predatory loans target our most vulnerable populations, such as our seniors, our low-income families, in addition to targeting our communities of color and our veterans. Since beginning our program in 2016, we have loaned over $2 million and have saved our families over $3 million in interest.
Is there anything that can be done at the federal level right now to change loan rates in Indiana, or does it have to be done here locally?
So, yeah, so there has been in the past. There was a Military Lending Act that was 2006-2007 that was specifically to address issues for current serving military personnel. That was lending has been an issue for them. If you ever went off like a military base, you could easily see pawn shops, payday lending sites, or state like storefronts just really targeting. So the problem became if someone serving in our military ran into these issues with payday lending and got into debt, it could affect their time, like what they could do serving in the military and bringing other people in the military to try to help solve the problem. So in 2006, 2007, I want to say, there was a cap put on loans for active service members to try to protect them from this, you know, running into the same issue. So that's kind of the push. And that's why the 36% number has been put out there, is because of this history of that. A lot of people have, you know, I've talked to want to see it even lower, but at least it's kind of seen as a starting point for that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Samantha Horton is a business and economics reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.